Gladys Clark, who has previously done other tapes for the Concord Oral History Program and who has spent a lifetime in the teaching profession, has consented to do a tape about education in Concord. This talk is based on one that she gave for the Women's Club last year in 1980. She is at present 88, and the date is April 21st, 1981.
Originally, our schools were based on the education to be found in England. Our settlers were people who lived in an area of England which had all the advantages of the education there. It was natural that they wanted their children to continue that same sort of life here in America. So a school was started in the very early days, which was called the English Latin Grammar School. It was in the form of the old English Latin grammar schools. This was in the early 1640s. In order to be admitted to one of these schools, or to this, which was the only school here in Concord, and was situated on Lowell Road, about where the Masonic Building stands, the original building is now on Bedford Street, that little old red house. It's much larger than the original building as it stood on Lowell Road. In order to be admitted to this school, a child must be able to read. The reading was taught by the dame in the dame school. That was a group of women in various parts of the town who would take the children of the neighborhood into their home. And it is exactly what was done in England. Therefore, here in America, the same procedure was followed. A child must be 7 years old and able to read in order to start this English grammar, Latin grammar school. Latin and English were the subjects that were stressed, and it was primarily for the boys so that they would be able to continue with their education at Harvard. But then it wasn't long before others were admitted, those who would not be following in their higher education, and girls finally were admitted. In this school, religion in the form of prayer was taught. Every session began with a prayer, and it ended with a prayer. Morals were very, very strongly accented. And, of course, Latin, grammar, and Greek were the essential subjects. Mathematics did not come into the schools until a child was 14. Quite the reverse of the way our education today is operated. Today, mathematics begin at the very beginning of the school, entrance into school, and it seems that English is taking a back seat. And Latin, of course, has just been knocked out. That, of course, was the foundation of the English language and was recognized so in the early days.
And of course morals may never come.
and of course morals. But as far and discipline, it's amazing that discipline had such a strong bearing of in the schools in those days, because singularly it was very difficult even in the high school to keep a teacher, to keep the principal of the school. And we have always heard of all the difficulties encountered. in 1687, it was decided that education should branch out and more should be included, and that a town support should be given for these schools. And so it was soon after that that we find the Latin grammar schools located in three different places in Concord. These schools were about where the town hall is, and one on Lexington Road, and I'm not sure exactly the location of that, but I think it was about where the present place where they keep the cannons, the guns.
Oh, yes, yes.
I think it was about there. And another one where the library is. Then in 1781, well, that was about 1781, that we have those schools going and being found there. One interesting thing was that the writing was done with a quill, and steel pens were not available, and the quills were sharpened by the teacher. The child took his own quill to school, and the teacher sharpened the quill for the use. That's how we got the word pen knife. It was a knife that was used to sharpen a quill pen. Latin and accent on grammar continued to be the essential things that were taught, along with Greek. Ready? In 1799, it was decided that the education should expand beyond the centers of town, and so the district schools were started. These were finally centered so that by 1817, there was a school in each of the nine districts of the town. These districts were operated entirely by the people of that district. The taxes were paid directly to those schools. The people of the area in which the school was centered had complete control, almost complete control, I should say, over the school. They had to pay the salary of the person who was teaching, supply the materials that were used, supply the wood, and see that the building was kept in order. The superintendent of schools of the town, who was quite often the minister, supervised all of the schools, but each district was responsible for that particular school. As far as the subjects went, it was agreed that practically the same subjects were to be taught in all the schools, but again, it was English and reading. English, reading, writing, and spelling. The teachers were paid a very small salary, but in those days it seemed to be sufficient. Usually about $5 a week. Then in high school it was $6 a week. And then sometimes $7. The principal of the high school, I believe, was paid about $800 a year. The discipline continued to be the tragedy of all the schools. Teachers refused to stay more than 1 year in most cases. They were usually girls, practically always girls, who lived in the area in which they taught. And so there again, it wasn't the easiest thing for the teachers or for the students to be so closely tied. But they were all wonderful women who undertook this work. Some of them remained until the later days, even when I started school in the 1900, I was going to school to one who had taught in the old district schools. Then came exhibition day. Instead of examination, it was called exhibition. Exhibition was an examination, really, of what had been accomplished during the year. This exhibition day came early in the year. I'm going to tell of some of the what was presented at some of the schools, and this was March 16, 1861. This exhibition came early in the year because as soon as spring had come and it was able to get the ground was able to be worked, the boys were always out on the farms, and so school did not keep too late in the spring. The exhibition of the high school was an order of exercises, a remark by the chairman, and a prayer by Grendel Reynolds. Then came remarks by the superintendent, and I think at that time it may have been Mr. Alton. The high school sang a song, "All the Blue Bonnets Are Over the Border." March, march, mothers and grandmas, come from each home that stands in our border. March, march, fathers and grandpas, now young America waits in good order. Here is a flower show, grown under winter snow, ready for spring with her sunshine and showers. Here every blossom grows, shamrock, thistle, and rose, and fresh from our hillsides, the pilgrims may flowers. This, of course, was typical of the songs that were sung, and especially at the time of the war. It was just the beginning of the Civil War. All the blue borders, bonnets, are over the border.
So it was in 1861.
Now we have the intermediate school, and here again for their exhibition, they sang a song, "This Is Our Yearly Jubilee," a recitation then and now, which we hear of today, then and now. And of course they always had these sad, sad things. A recitation, "There is a reaper whose name is death." They always had to get in something like that. And then of course there's that discipline, "Do good," recitation. And then because the Irish had come into Concord, we have a recitation, "Seamus O'Brien," which of course was very wonderful because it took in that element of our town. Then came an extract from Walden. At the East Center Primary School, we have Miss Jane Hosmer for the teacher. Miss Jane and Miss Abby Hosmer lived on Lowell Road in that house which is just over the bridge, just near the bridge, and they were wonderful, wonderful people. I think everybody who lived in Concord, went to school in Concord, even until the Hosmer girls, as we call them, were in their late 80s, finished their education with the Hosmer girls, Miss Jane especially. She taught Latin and Greek right up to the very end, and they were just marvelous people. Anyone in high school who was failing and could afford, of course they didn't charge very much for their services, but anyone who was going to college or was failing always went to the Hosmer girls to get brushed up in their education. So back here in 1861, Jane Hosmer was teaching the East Center Primary School, and she had this song as for her exhibition, "We Are Little Flower Buds, the Little Classmates." And I can very well see just how Miss Jane was just making those people so happy. Of course, I knew her very well way back when it got to be the 1915, 16, maybe into the 20s. And it was always a happy day for me to visit there. It seems that my great-grandmother and the Osmond girl's mother were inseparable friends. And I have the chair, which my great-grandmother willed to Miss the Abbey Jane's mother. And then it went to my aunt, and now I sit in it. The North Center Primary School is where Miss Susan Goodall taught. I don't happen to know anything about her. And here she had a song, "Come and Join Us, Dear Companions," and a recitation, "Contented Life." Oh, that they might have things like that today. And then next was Marion's Dream, and then a concert, "The Rainbow," and the recitation, "We Are Seven." Something which I have taught all my life up until these very last years of my teaching. Even right here in Concord, I used to read that poem, "We Are Seven." And it made such an impression upon me when I learned it here in school that I happened to be wandering through a churchyard one Sunday afternoon in Conway in Wales. And I went into the church, and it was a baptismal service, and I couldn't understand anything that was being said in their Welsh. And so I wandered out into the churchyard, and there were seven little crosses. And I said, "Oh, we are seven." Sure enough, this was where the little cottage was, where the little sat there and read her, ate a porringer, and here were the seven little graves. Made such an impression upon me that when I was teaching, I continued to read that poem and show the children the picture of that graveyard and the seven little crosses. And see how many years that has gone through life, from 1861 until 1980 I was teaching it. Goodness me. And then here's a very appropriate song they had, "Cleanliness." And I don't know whether we need to stress that today or not, but I think there were times in those days when they did have to. Then "Willie and the Apple Tree," and of course, that was a fun poem, "Willie and the Apple Tree." Would the children could enjoy the apple tree more today. Then "The Ants," and here comes nature again. And then, of course, comes the religious part of their schooling. A recitation, "Jesus, Tender Shepherd, Hear Me." I'm glad that Miss Goodall carried out the instructions of the early days to close things with a prayer. Next, we come to the West Center Primary. And Miss Sarah Richardson, and she continued even into my day, not as a teacher, but she continued to live very well and comfortably and honorably here in Concord, even into the 1920s. I'm sure it was 1920. And her song, "Vacation Days," "Boston Boys," and "General Howe," she brings in the history, which had transpired not too long before. Then the song of "Gentle Annie" and "The Pilgrim's Progress," a story from "The Pilgrim's Progress." A recitation, "Minutes," which probably emphasized the importance of time. And then the next recitation, "The Union." And here again we get the history, which she was stressing. And finally ending with a song. I hope I'm not making this too long.
No, but this is very much what a commencement
would
be.
Yes. And now we have a recess, and next we go to the East Quarter School. You see, the minister and the chairman of the school board are what? Trailed around all these schools on exhibition day and witnessed all of these exercises, and so they had to have a little recess. then we come to the East Quarter, and I hope you people all know where these different quarters are. The East Quarter is down here on Lexington Road area, way down. And here, Miss Abby Hubbard was the teacher. And we have, she begins with a declamation, an extract from Washington's farewell address. We get the history. Next, you see, because this is an older class, is a children's geographical exercise. And I am wondering just what that geographical exercise might be, because I understand that geography had to wait until a later time before that was introduced. Then comes a reading in Rome, and here again is history and geography. And the next recitation is from Evangeline, and again the geography and history play a part. Then comes gymnastics. Now that's quite unusual in those days, I presume, to have gymnastics, because of all the exercise the kids had walking to school and doing the farm chores. And they certainly got plenty of exercise. But gymnastics, I suppose, was deep breathing and correct posture and all the sort of things that would be necessary if they're going into the army with the war just around the corner. When I was teaching and had little gymnastic exercises to limber them up a bit, and I stressed very strongly to keep in motion together, because if you're not together, you'll be the first man shot. They'll be spotted immediately. So perhaps this was why she was having gymnastics. And then we go on with a song, closing with the gymnastics and then a happy little song. The North Quarter, which was up where Middlesex School is. No, this was farther. The North Quarter was farther north than that. The North Quarter was way up the Westford, way up Westford Road and Spencer Brook Road, and way up in that area. And there, Miss S.A. Brown, now the Browns lived where the Middlesex School now is, their farmhouse there. Mr. Brown owned that whole great area where the Middlesex School is, or most of that area, and it was called a stock farm. So I suppose Miss S.A. Brown was the daughter of the Brown who lived there. And she had a recitation, The Crystal Hunters, and the explanation of Q. Brute. Now, if anyone who lived up in the North Quarter ever had a use for Q. Brute, it's a question in my mind. They were farmers to the nth degree, and back country people. If Q. Brute might have been used for some of their wood piles or manure piles or something like that, but I can't imagine. But anyway, that is what she taught. That just floored me when I found Q. Brute out there. Evidently, her father was a very brilliant man and taught it to her, so she was passing on the knowledge. Now, we come to the Bateman's Pond School, which was right there at the intersection of Lowell Road and Westford Road. And Miss S.P. Bean, and the Beans, only Beans I knew, lived downtown, but she might have boarded out there somewhere while she was teaching. And here we see the Pilgrim's Progress, which seemed to be enacted, apparently. It was a little portrayal of Pilgrim's Progress. It says scenes from Pilgrim's Progress, so I should say it might have been a little play. Then there was an exhibition of printing, the printing as opposed to the cursive writing. Then dialogue, the mathematician. So you see, the Cube Root and the mathematician are centered out in the Laurel Road area. I just wonder how many of the people who lived in that area made use of these instructions they received.
Probably one of those things that was considered good for you.
Oh, yes. Next came writing on the board. And again, it's bringing in. Miss Bean apparently thought printing and writing were very essential so that whatever they wrote could be recognized. And then a little declamation. I love Little Pussy. I can't see Little Pussy going in with the mathematicians, but still, this is a one-room school with everything from the first grade up through the eighth grade. So I suppose the Little Pussy's recitation was for the first grade, where the mathematician was for the upper grade who would be going into high school. So she had quite a bit to cover. Then we come to the Barrett's Mill School, and here we see Miss M.E. Prescott. Now, the Prescotts, of course, lived over on Monument Street, but whether at one time some of the family lived down on Barrett's Mill Road, I'm not sure, because I do know that Cyrus Cook lived on Barrett's Mill Road, where the Corys live now. And Mrs. Cook was a Prescott. So there was evidently some tie in there that the Prescotts did have, whether living on Monument Street or whether they had did live for a time down there on Barrett's Mill. But she was teaching at the Barrett's Mill School. And a dialogue, what is most beautiful. Then we have a geographical chart. And that, again, shows a more advanced use of the school facilities. And a dialogue, metaphysics. Well, my father went to this Barrett Mill School. My aunt went there, and my uncle, and my father became an engineer. His sister became a very expert typist, and she was a typist secretary. And my uncle also was just a wonderfully well-educated, all-round man. So, and a very understanding person. So, metaphysics or not, they certainly got a good education there. Next, we come to the Factory Village School. Miss Whitney, and of course Whitney's were a family that came in at some time that I didn't know about. The Factory Village was in West Concord. You know, there's a brook over there. That was called the Factory Village, where that brook is. And here she had a song, Little Canoe, which of course, with Warner's Pond and the lake there, Little Canoe would be quite appropriate. And then a song, Happy Land. They didn't do very much apparently, West Concord. The Nine Acre Corner School had a Miss Stearns. And I don't happen to know. The Stearns family lived down here in the center of town, but whether there was a Stearns family at Nine Acre Corner, I don't know. She might have gone in that area to board. And here we have a dramatization and a song, The Seasons. Then spelling comes into play, and this is the first school where we have found that spelling played an important part in the exercises. Then a dialogue, The Four Wishes, the song, The Echo, and a dialogue, The Letter. There's nothing here that shows any thing to do with mathematics or geography or history. Spelling was the one thing. So everybody Nine Acre Corner should certainly be an expert speller. At the high school, we had a Mr. Shepherd. And there we have a speech by Mr. Bowers and a remarks by Mr. Shepherd. Then a song, Farewell Ye Friends. Evidently, the high school, which closed the session, didn't play much of a part to entertain folks. It was the end of the day, and I guess they were glad to see it finished. Mr. Emerson closed the day with remarks there, and then the song, Auld Lang Syne. Well, that takes a great deal of listening to, if you could stand it, to the different things that were carried on in the district schools. And then, after the district school, we find that I can't recall just when the first centralized school was established, and schools were established. But previous to that, I believe the high school was inaugurated. The high school was on Hubbard Street, where the Hunt Gymnasium now stands. There was the high school had the upper floor, I believe, but I'm not sure, but that it had both. I guess preparatory high school was downstairs, and the real high school was upstairs. Mr. Eaton was the teacher and the principal when the school, high school was established, and he finished his career my first year in high school, which was 1906. He passed away at that time. And he established a very fine feeling among the students and the teachers all over town. When we had the centralized grammar school, which was called the Emerson School, the high school, the new high school, had been built. And the old high school on Hubbard Street was used for kindergarten downstairs, first grade upstairs. And again, we had local people as teachers. Miss Worthley, who lived on Lower Road, was the kindergarten, and Harriet Clark, who had been teaching from the district school days, was the first grade teacher. Harriet Clark, who was the first grade teacher at the what was the old high school and then it was called the Ripley School, was my father's cousin. I said the Clarks have all been teachers right down through my generation. My nephews, my nieces are all teachers. I guess we don't know anything else to do but teach. But, you know, the word Clark means one who can read or write. A clerk is one who can read or write. And I guess we followed that right down through the generations. In fact, my first ancestor to America, who was Samuel Clark, I find that in the archives in the State House in Boston, his will, when probated in the early 1600s, contained his Latin books and Bibles. So you see, it's just sort of a continuation through the lines. You can't change the breed of reading and teaching. Well, anyway, Harriet Clark later was a third grade teacher, and she was really an inspiration to every child in Concord. And later on, I found that men who had gone to school to her as a child have said, Harriet Clark, oh, she was my teacher. She always dressed so nicely with a pretty pink ribbon in her hair, a little pink bow or a pink or a yellow bow or a blue bow in her hair. She just made herself attractive for the children so that they would be happy. And she was a very musical and taught music and she just impressed every child who went to her. And when they became adults, if they knew that I was related, they were extra good to me. The classes were large. She always had 50 children, but every child meant something to her. Well, by the time that I went to school, which was in the, about 1901 or 2, maybe a little later than that. I got through the Emerson School in 1906, so it took about 6 years for me to get there. And so I went to the second grade in the high school. You see, the high school at that time, that building's now torn down, you know, it's a parking lot, but there were plenty of empty rooms. And so our second grade was downstairs in the high school on the side nearest the library. And I was there for a month, which I think was long enough, because the one thing that I learned there was a poem. The day is dark and cold and dreary, and the wind is ever weary, and the lingering vines to the wall still cling, and the day is dark and cold and dreary. Well, I guess I was pretty happy to leave that dreary atmosphere and go upstairs to the third grade. And I remember that teacher's name. She was Miss Chadwick, and she really brought a brighter ray into my life. But that brighter ray was arithmetic, which I wasn't especially fond of. But we had pages and pages and pages of adding, subtracting, multiplying, and I guess we started a little dividing. But by that time, I began to have whooping cough and rheumatic fever and everything else. And I really never had a chance to learn to read because I'd skipped all those phonics and everything through one thing after another, so that I finally landed in the fourth grade, which was in the Emerson School. And that was downstairs on the west side. And there I had a wonderful teacher, Miss Whiting. She was young and very attractive, and she never scolded, and we read, or I tried to read, I guess the others read. And if we couldn't read, why, she'd read the poem to us, or the story to us. Black Beauty stood out in my mind, and fairy stories. And things went along very smoothly. But there I learned how important it was for a teacher to wear pretty clothes. My teachers had always been well-dressed, but you know, the same dress every day, day after day after day, you know, just how the teacher's going to look every day. But this teacher on Friday went home to visit, and apparently she had a boyfriend, because on Friday afternoon she came dressed in a very lovely suit. In summer, it was a green suit, beautiful shade of green, with a lavender hat. And in winter, it was a purple suit with a green hat. And I always look forward to Friday afternoon to see that pretty vision coming into the room and staying with me all the afternoon. Well, I guess so. By the time I got through fourth grade, I didn't know much about reading, and I don't know if I knew much about anything else, but I went into the fifth grade, which was upstairs, and there I had Miss Hurd. She was the inspiration of my life, really. She lived with Miss Leggett at the Emerson House with Miss Ellen Emerson, and she brought all the Emerson inspiration that I loved right next door to me. And she just knew that I hadn't learned all I should have learned in the past. And she just very gently let me know that I should be more careful with my arithmetic, and that I should really concentrate on my reading and my spelling. And she just made me realize that I must work hard. So, although I wasn't too proficient when I went into the fifth grade, by the end of the year, I was really where I belonged. And I had her again in the sixth grade. And there, I really learned what life was. She just inspired me so with stories of the Greeks and the Romans and just everything that was really worthwhile in literature. And of course that just inspired me to do everything else better, because I felt I was getting a grasp on the things that really meant a lot to me in life. So that year just stood right out in my life and continued from then on to have given me a focus on that to which I must aspire. And so then I went on to the seventh grade. That grade didn't matter much. And then came the eighth grade with Miss Leggett, and no one who ever was in Miss Leggett's room will ever forget that room. Scared to death of her. She was the principal, and it was always a happy day when she was going into the office and the assistant had full swing. Well, I survived, but many didn't, and it was in the eighth grade that one after the other of the people who had gone with me through the other grades dropped back, stayed back, stayed back, stayed back. And the big boys, oh, I think they all left school about then. And I see them around town later. I guess most of them have died by this time. And I thought, well, you know, they weren't so bad after all. They should have kept right on going. But, oh, she was going to make perfection out of everybody. So a few of us went on into high school. And so through high school, we continued. And it was really wonderful to graduate with, in 1910, with people with whom I had started and gone through all the grades. There might have been 10 of us who had gone through all the years together. And then when we had our 50th reunion in 1960, we still had so many personal, wonderful things to narrate. So our Concord schools have been wonderful, wonderful schools. The education here has made everybody realize that they've lived in a town that has given them the best. When I went to normal school, I really don't know why I went to normal school. I hadn't thought about being a teacher, but I just heard that everybody who went there to Fitchburg Normal had a wonderful time, and that's what I wanted to have in life at that moment. But I found that I really liked teaching after I got into the swing of it. And you know, class after class, I would say to myself, why is it that these girls don't know this and don't know that? And they'd say to me, well, how did you know this? Mm-hmm. And I'd say, I had it in school. And so, one thing after the other, I just assimilated my work there at normal school very, very naturally, because it was only carrying on the education that had been started in Concord. The facts that I had learned in school here were really above the average, because I had no difficulty in just going on and finding that I knew things that the others didn't know. It had all been taught to me here.
And that was the beginning of your imparting this knowledge to others.
Oh, yes.
Thank you.